Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Ash, The Legends of the Nameless World by Kirill Klavansky. Introduction by Valeria Kornosenko. Narrated by Kirby Hayborn. Prologue. A red comet traced the sky, attracting the attention of those who were not in their beds that night. Old Gwell was one of them. Putting her hand to her wrinkled, parchment-colored forehead, she leaned more heavily on her staff and tried to quicken the pace of her feeble feet. The moment the fiery messenger of the gods cast its shadow on the beautiful Miristal, Gwell knew what was coming. The events that would follow would shake the abyss where the demons dwelled, the kingdom of Fira, the home of the humans, and even the seventh heaven, forcing the Jasper Emperor to recall his duties. The red comet was a message from fate herself, she who stands above all the gods, immortals and mortals. She had made her move, sliding the first pawn across the board with a firm, unwavering hand. According to the prophecies, this was enough for the world to burn down. Gwell walked down the street, watching the crimson trail fade into the inky blackness of the night.
"I hear you, my queen," she whispered through her chapped lips and grinned, revealing her crooked teeth. "I hear you."
The comet disappeared, and Miristal, as if mocking it, once again lit up the meadow with a silvery glow. It tried to shake off the crimson hue that, like blood, left a coppery taste on the tongue. That night marked the beginning of a chain of events that would change the world forever. Chapter 1. Age of the Drunken Monk, Year 292, Middle Kingdom. Gwell let out a sigh of relief when she noticed a column of thick black smoke rising from the woods behind the hill. Her eyes could barely see, but her sense of smell was sharper than ever. The wind carried the stench of burnt bodies and wood, as well as the song of well-fed steel, drunk on warm blood. The average individual would feel their blood run cold and run back from whence they came, but not Gwell. With confidence in her step, she followed the comet's trail, wondering what fate had in store for her. Her queen had made it clear that she had chosen her priestess, for a very special task. As it usually was with these kinds of stories, she didn't know the details. Fate, unlike the gods, was silent in her omniscience. Bare feet covered with scabs kept sinking into mud, but Gwell pushed on. As long as she had her trusty staff carved from the enchanted tree, she could go on. The staff was of little value and nothing special in its appearance, but any Turnite would turn green with envy if they knew how powerful it was. The grass rustled under her feet, speaking to Gwell in a language which she had learned so long ago that she'd sometimes confuse it with that of the humans. The clouds moved across the sky with grace that could put any aristocrat to shame. They spoke to her about fate, and she listened. At night, when the messenger visited their lands under the inky cover of the heavens, a heated battle took place. A caravan of dozens of travelers stumbled upon the Order of the Clawed Wing, the members of which were mostly necromancers and evil spellcasters. They were beardless youths, vaunting their strength and perceived omnipotence, wishing to sell their tender young bodies to the demons. It was because of such scum that the people of the 13 kingdoms hated all those who had anything to do with magic, those known as Turnites. Gwell followed the path that divided the forest into two and stopped at the edge of the clearing. Clouds always liked to embellish their stories. They were too high up to see the details. What they described as a battle was a massacre. Torn bodies of the caravan guards lay scattered across the forest floor, now the color of wet vitriol. All the young men who had picked up the sword, hoping, no, longing for fame and adventure, never thinking of their mothers who cried by the windows, wondering when their sons would come home. Gwell spat. More than nobles and kings, she hated those who thought they were strong enough to thrive outside the city's walls. Stepping over the body of a guard whose ripped throat exposed a swollen tongue, the old priestess approached the scorched stagecoach. It was there, in the bowels of this once beautiful wagon, that she could feel the pulse of Terna.
"Move over, corpse,"
Gwell said, and pushed away the remains of a tall, handsome man that were blocking the entrance. A rain of a dozen arrows tore through his leather armor and sent him flying several feet to the side. The first rule of the inhabitants of the Nameless World was that one should never stand in the way of an old woman dressed in rags, as you might never know just what kind of magic she wields or with whom she speaks in her enchanted grove. Gwell sighed when she realized that trying to climb into the wagon would make her old bones crack and ache. Peeking in, she saw that the attackers didn't shy away from wrecking everything that stood in their way. And while the vehicle still resembled a stagecoach from the outside, its interior was that of an oven, char, and nothing but. Judging by the number of arrows that had lodged themselves into the coach, the raiders must have attacked from all sides. It was a tasteless and dishonorable tactic, but an efficient one.
"I'm too old for this, my queen,"
Gwell whispered, observing the looted and battered chests and boxes. Straightening her back, she hit the ground with her staff and moved her lips in silent prayer. She spoke in a language that few could understand, and even that only if they had tamed the wildest of magic. A moment later, the fallen beams inside the coach began to shake. The soot covering them crumbled, and the broken wheels were mended anew. Tatters rose from the ground and spliced again in the air, forming beautiful tapestries and cloths. Shreds of glass rattled as they merged back into vials and vases.
"And who do we have here?"
Gwell climbed up the creaky stairs and pushed aside the curtain that shrouded the now restored interior of the coach. It was well equipped and quite cozy, suggesting that the owners of the caravan were planning on staying away from home for quite a while. During their travels from one continent to another, they had managed to acquire enough goods to attract the attention of the heretics. On the floor, in a pool of dried blood, lay a once beautiful woman, the one that the fiery fae had been guarding. At least now it was clear where all that fire had come from. Locks of raven hair were still smoldering. Pale, thin limbs were bent at unnatural angles, and her cheap but beautiful dress was eaten away by the flames and reduced to ugly tatters.
"My dear, dear girl,"
Gwell said, sitting down on a stool that rushed over to her from the other corner of the room.
"Didn't your mother warn you that you'd never return home if you went away with the Fae?"
Using the end of her staff, she removed the rags from the woman's abdomen and groin. Closing her eyes and shaking her head, Gwell sighed.
"You vile beasts couldn't have left the woman to die with dignity, could you? To violate a pregnant woman. Oh, my dear, dear child, what have they done to you?"
With her third eye, she spotted a faint glow emanating from the woman's womb, and although she had been dead for several hours now, the child had miraculously survived. No, not by a miracle. The gods didn't like bestowing those on anyone. It had survived to spite them, and to take revenge on those who had murdered its mother. Gwell pulled a curved dagger from the folds of her robe and kneeled by the woman.
"You might just live a better life than your predecessors, little one. They were born dead."
The blade slid across the swollen stomach, easily slicing through the bruised skin. Blood trickled onto the floor, flowing through the cracks between the planks and dripping to the already red soil. Without even flinching, Gwell reached into the slit and pulled the baby out and into the light. Covered in slime and blood, the boy looked disgusting, but it was a life worth saving nonetheless. After cutting the cord, Gwell removed the scarf from her head and wrapped it around the child. Her thick, silver hair fell over her shoulder, revealing a brand on her forehead, the mark of a slave. The child didn't cry.
Seems to be dead.
Gwell was about to abandon him and leave when she noticed a thin, clean trail on his cheeks. The boy wept and breathed, but he did not whine.
"Isn't it funny, if not frightening, that the first sensation a newborn feels is pain?"
Gwell asked no one in particular and stepped out of the wagon. Her staff, as if it had come to life, leaped after her as she cradled the child in her arms.
"The world warns it immediately that it's a cruel and dangerous place. But children never listen."
Once again, she stopped by the young warrior in torn chainmail. The steel rings were biting into his chest, and the crows that had gathered on the trees were ogling his exposed ribs. They'd soon fly down and feast, but for the time being, they observed the priestess and listened to the sound of the approaching hooves. Someone seemed to have noticed the smoke rising above the treetops and called the guards to investigate.
"What do you need, you blob of flesh?"
Gwell asked, noticing that the child was trying to extend its hands toward her. As it turned out, she had stopped right next to the body of a fae. Its inhuman black eyes were glassy, and its body drenched in scarlet. Most people still didn't believe in their existence. Then again, people didn't believe in a lot of things, but that didn't prevent them from bowing to idols and touching the marble temple floors with their foreheads.
"A sign?"
She looked down at the child, and in its gaze she beheld not just its own fate, but that of the whole world. Its barely opened eyes were of different colors, one brown, almost black, and the other bright blue.
"Half-breed," she hissed and nearly dropped the child in disgust. "Thank you, little princess. You've rewarded me in my old age."
The child continued reaching upward, making the priestess grimace as her cloak flapped in the breeze. The staff, frozen a few steps behind, flew over to its mistress, and the trio disappeared into a black haze, dispersed by the wind. When a party of horsemen led by a knight arrived at the scene of the massacre, all they found was a caravan destroyed by an angered fae. Chapter 2. Age of the Drunken Monk, Year 299, somewhere on the border of the Middle Kingdom.
"Ash, you stupid little dumbass!"
The boy was sitting in the hallway of a house so small that it looked more like an oversized shed. The woman called out for him again, but he didn't hear her, too busy watching the sky and letting the wind caress his hair, gathered in a tight tail tied with a leather strap. Stroking the air with his fingers, he observed the clouds as if trying to reach them. He felt like they were talking to him, but he knew that had to be nonsense, since clouds couldn't speak.
"Ash, you spawn of demonic lust, I'll tear you apart!"
Gwell, on the other hand, could speak, too much and too often. Sometimes he wished that she'd shut up for just a little while. No, not wished. He would have preferred it if she'd shut up forever. Perhaps one of the kitchen knives ran across her throat would make her quiet down. Ash stood up and walked into a room that smelled of herbs and old age. Gwell was sitting in her chair and staring at the cauldron hanging over the fireplace. Over the years, she had grown so old and ill that she could no longer move or see on her own, and so Ash had to drag everything over to her or her to wherever she needed to go. As there was only one bed in the small house, he preferred to sleep outside.
"You little cretin," she hissed. "I should have left you inside that whore of a mother of yours who thought it wise to lay with the beasts."
"Yes, mistress," Ash nodded, although he didn't understand what she was trying to convey with her insults. Then again, he didn't understand what anger was. He didn't understand concepts like contentment, envy, sadness, joy, hate, desire, or any other emotion that many others seemed to be experiencing. Gwell had said that this was because he observed the world through the eyes of the Fae and not those of a human. But Ash understood nothing of it, for to himself he seemed very much human. However, he'd often feel like his soul was split in half. And until the two halves found harmony, he'd walk this earth as an animated puppet, devoid of emotion. Long story short, the old woman was senile and spewing gibberish.
"Throw the grass into the cauldron," Gwell grunted.
"Yes, mistress." The boys stepped over to the table, stood on tiptoe, and tore a bunch of grass from one of the bundles. Separating the blades, he threw them into a seething brew the color of sickness.
"Your mother should have taken this potion."
The old woman smelled worse than the brewing concoction, but Ash endured.
One sip, and I wouldn't be having to deal with you now."
"Yes, mistress."
"What?"
Gwell coughed. Ash immediately brought her a pitcher of water. She always had one nearby in case her throat started feeling dry.
"Thank you, you little bastard."
A wrinkled, warm hand ruffled his hair. If Ash had known the difference between good and bad, he would have considered Gwell good but foul-mouthed. She often threatened to whip, strangle, starve, drown, or burn him, but she never acted upon these words. And during the long, hard winters when food was scarce, she always made sure that he had enough to eat.
"What did you see in the woods today, boy?"
Every day she'd ask him about what he saw or heard in the woods, as if she thought that the trees would come to life and share their stories with him, or that one of the animals would suddenly speak up in a language he could understand. "Trees, grass, flowers, animals, and clouds."
"And?"
Ash pondered, and then it dawned on him. "I saw a squirrel." Gwell blinked a few times and burst into a raspy laughter that resembled the croaking of a dying crow. The laugh continued until she started coughing again.
"A squirrel, he says," she grunted, taking a sip of water. "Eyes of a fae, but blind as a bat."
"Yes, mistress."
"How can I teach you to talk if you can't listen?"
the old woman continued.
"It's been so long, and you still can't talk."
"I can," Ash replied, stirring the concoction with a long wooden spoon. Tomorrow at dawn, a girl from the village should come for a vial of the potion. Gwell told him that it cured women of bloating, but Ash wasn't stupid. He knew that the potion killed the fetus inside the womb.
"You can growl and hiss like a beast, but you can't talk."
"Yes, mistress." If there was one thing that Ash had learned, it was that there was no point in trying to argue with Gwell. She was very old, and for every argument Ash could raise, she would counter with a dozen more.
"By the Queen, if you say yes, mistress, one more time, I'll drown you in the cesspool."
"Yes, Ash swallowed when his eyes met her half-blind glare.
"Attaboy," she said, stroking her staff. "And why are you having such a difficult time learning words? You have enough Turner for several people, so you're suited for it."
"Turner?" Ash asked. "And I know words. I'm talking to you, aren't I?"
"I've told you about Turnites and Turner and why our world is nameless, haven't I?"
"Is it really nameless?" Gwell swore so hard that the potion's stench got even viler.
"By the Queen, I've been waiting for you to listen, but you seem to not know what you're listening to."
Ash would have been offended if he could, but all he did was wait for Gwell to continue her speech, which she did after more cursing and another sip of water.
"No one knows where the power came from, but a couple of eons ago, people became equal to non-humans. Not all of them, of course, only those who could wield it. They called it Turner. Since then, the Turnites, those who could control this power, were taught how to use their gift. No ordinary warrior is stronger than a Turnite warrior, no alchemist wiser than a Turnite alchemist, and no mage more skilled than a Turnite mage. So it was for many thousands of years, until the Turnites exiled the ordinary people, and there was no more division left to be had."
Gwell coughed again, and Ash, not waiting for her to tell him to bring more to drink, ran outside to the barrel where they collected rainwater. Expecting a long conversation, he filled the pitcher to the brim, brought it back inside, and refilled Gwell's cup. She eagerly drank the cold water and, wiping her lips with a wrinkled hand, continued her story.
"In general, the Turnites replaced the Urnites, the ordinary people. The most that an Urnite can hope to achieve is to be given chainmail and die in a war as a soldier, or cannon fodder, as they're more frequently called. The rest of the jobs were taken over by the Turnites: assassins, witches, mages, paladins, necromancers, sorcerers, hermits, heretics, hunters, and so on and so forth. Like locusts, they swarmed the 13 kingdoms."
Despite listening carefully, Ash had little idea what she was on about.
"At one point, there were so many Turnites that the cities became too small for their giant egos. And then the kings, even those of ordinary men, decided that Turnites should serve only for the benefit of mankind. So, thank you, I guess, you little maggot, for not yet doing them a disservice. Anyway, the Turnites now roam the world, carrying out various tasks. Those who refuse this sacred duty are considered heretics and hunted down like wild beasts. Such is life."
"But what does that have to do with words?" Ash asked, stirring the brew.
"It has all to do with everything,"
the old woman barked and coughed again.
"With you, Ash, the Turner is water and you're a fish. It's all around you."
Ash shrugged. "I don't feel it."
"Because you can't feel it. You don't know how. But more about that later. Let me teach you about words. All, even the poorest people, have their language. Take a stone, for example. There are 1,000 words with which to describe and call it, but they're all false. You have one name, Ash, "It's not the best, but not the worst one either," she said.
Ash wanted to tell her that it was her who had given him that name, but he kept silent.
"And just like you, this stone has its own name."
"What is it?" Gwell's lips moved, but he heard nothing.
"You don't hear," she said, "and you won't be able to hear until you learn how to listen. Just like you and the stone, everything in this world has its name, its true name, let's say. Those names make up the language spoken by the gods who created our world. And knowledge of this language, knowledge of the name, gives power. That's why no one knows the name of our world, for the gods are afraid of the power that it holds. This is the language you must learn to speak if you want to understand the essence of magic."
"Why does it have to be magic?" Ash asked.
"Look at yourself. You're small and scrawny. You ain't good for nothing other than carrying a staff and an entire library in your head."
The boy shrugged again. He didn't care.
"Hold on," she said, genuinely angry. "You haven't seen me do magic."
"You do magic?" Gwell froze, then laughed, and then spent a while praising and cursing her queen, who had played such a cruel trick on her.
"Looks like the timing is right," Gwell said abruptly. "Observe, little maggot."
The old woman ran her fingers over her staff and whispered something. A moment later, the kitchen came alive. Knives jumped out of their boxes and began cutting herbs. The spoon with which he had been stirring the potion leaped out of his hand and continued the work on its own. The tablecloth suddenly rose into the air and moved to the window to shake crumbs off itself. The fire in the hearth danced vigorously, and the chair that Gwell was sitting in swayed a little bit slower.
"Ah, I've still got it,"
Gwell whispered contentedly and closed her eyes.
"Are these words?"
"The best kind. Now, go outside. I want you to learn at least one word by tonight."
Chapter 3. 2 days later. Ash spent all his free time, of which he had much, outside, but he never learned a single word. Gwell never became tired of teasing him about it, sometimes calling him particularly vile names. Ash was feeling what could best be described as annoyance. He felt like absolutely everything was trying to talk to him. The wind rustling to the treetops chuckled at him. The grass swayed, eager to tell him its story. The branches creaked, wanting to share their wisdom. And clouds, sailing silently across the vast blue, wished to tell him about distant lands. Lost as he was in these sounds, Ash almost reached the essence of the words a couple of times, but the moment he tried to focus on it, everything ceased. The wind was wind again, the branches were only creaking, and the clouds were just giant tufts of white.
"Hey, devil incarnate!"
Ash dusted his pants and returned inside, where Gwell, as always, was rocking back and forth in her chair, gaze fixated on the fireplace. Perhaps she didn't perceive the same things that Ash saw in the flames. He was certain that he heard something in the crackling of the logs, as for the first time in his life, he felt something that could only be described as desire. "Yes, mistress?"
"Didn't I tell you that I'd drown you in the cesspool if you called me that again?"
"You said that 2 days ago."
2 days ago,"
Gwell echoed.
"She never came for the potion."
Her milky gaze became blurrier. She was almost completely blind.
"Take it,"
she said and pointed at her staff.
It'll serve you.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?